Ah, Frank Wiegers, good to see you.
Yes, sir. Good to be here. Dr. Drew, nice to see you.
Website, TopGunLove.com. It's got a book out, so that's why they do that, men and women and their hormones. I love all the F-100 fighter jets and all that kind of stuff, so we'll get into that. But the book, tell me about that, because I think, Drew,
yes,
we are, you know, in our desperate attempt, our crazed Huffington Post attempt to turn men and women into the same creature,
right,
we're going to fuck up a lot of 14-year-old boys because their
and
brains are
too.
Going in a totally different direction.
And girls, too.
Yeah. My son and daughter are insanely different.
Right.
Insanely different.
Well, you made them that way, man.
That's the way it goes, isn't it?
Yeah. So what do you know, Frank?
Well, you know, we started out with this thing, and you know, I was talking to a guy, and I said, you know, I really like helping people with love, sex, and relationship. And you guys did amazing work with Loveline and still do. And, you know, somebody said, well, how could you bring what you used to do into what you're doing now? And I said, well, I was a fighter pilot. And he said, well, you're the Top Gun of love. And I said, wait a minute. That makes me sound like the stud of the world. I'm right. Good, but geez, mm-hmm. You know. So why don't we call it Top Gun Love mm-hmm. and make it a fighter pilot's manual for sizzling sex and lasting relationships. So a fighter pilot's manual, in the manual for a jet fighter, section one is description and operation. Two is normal procedures, emergency procedures, crew duties, all-weather operations, performance factors. And then there's checklists, and there's notes, and then there's cautions and warnings. So we put the whole thing together like a manual for a jet fighter. Then we realized that nobody's going to read this manual because jet fighter manuals are about that thick.
3 inches thick.
Yeah.
For the podcast listeners.
Oh, right. So the first section, description and operation, is the most important one because if you're going to fly an airplane, you got to know how the flight system interacts with the hydraulic system and all that stuff. And people get in relationship, and they don't know how the guy's testosterone system is driving them, and the women sure do not understand that.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And the women have estrogen and oxytocin, and the guys do not understand that. Why do women talk so much?
Right.
You know? And the oxytocin, you know, they talk and they bond and they get all that oxytocin. They're getting high with the oxytocin. And the guys got the testosterone running all the time, and women don't understand why they're looking at every pretty girl that walks down the street. So all this stuff goes on.
Yeah, well, I've found it in my own life where, you know, I provide, I lease the house, I mean, lease the cars and provide the stuff and, you know, put in the alarm system in the house and do all the sort of safety protection and pay for everything, and then it's like, hey, where are the flowers? And I'm like, flowers? They'll be dead in 4 days. What the fuck's that got to do with anything? And my wife's like, I'd like to see some flowers. I'm like, you'd like to see some flowers in your big house with your big, beautiful car and your school and the things? Like, that's look what I'm doing. And she's like, nah. And we have, you know, it runs both directions. I have my blind spots. She has her blind spots and vice versa. But you look at it, I really do think that women would look at cheating a completely different way if they really understood what young men especially are kind of going through. Like, hormonally.
You mean if they themselves were cheating or if the male was cheating?
No. If they understood and felt what the guy feels. Because all you can ever do is swap places with the person emotionally and try to interpret what's going on.
Yeah.
If a woman would think, if I'm cheating, it's because I wasn't getting something at home.
Right. Relationship was inadequate.
Right. When a guy cheats, it just means he's out of town.
Yeah.
There's an opportunity. Right. He's got a boner.
It's interesting when the transgender female to males, that's the first thing they'll say. They go, oh, my God, you guys have been dealing with this since you were 13. How the hell? How do you deal with that?
Right.
Yeah. Well, the hormone, not only the hormone, what's a guy making 150 million sperm every day trying to get out?
Right.
And the rush of testosterone. Every 17 to 60 seconds, you know, he's just primed. I mean, we're created as guys. We're created to have sex with every woman that we can to inseminate them.
So, I need you to swing by for dinner. Now, we won't we'll sort of work into this conversation. Well, you know, we'll start talking about your flying days, and then I'll say, "What are you up to now?"
Maybe start with a couple of drinks. As a metaphor, move the missile over to the penis. Maybe get that way.
I do use that metaphor because you know, in foreplay, for example. If you want to shoot a missile off your airplane, there's a number of switches you got to arm in a certain order. Right. Otherwise, you pull the trigger, nothing happens. It doesn't go off. Or you pull the trigger, it goes off, but it's a dud because it's not armed.
Right.
Well, when you're making love to a woman, it's the same kind of thing. If you don't sort of, quote, arm her in the right way, you don't do the foreplay, you don't get the connection going, you're going to have a dud.
The website is TopGunLove.com. So how do you start off? You're flying F-100s in Vietnam?
Right. I was flying a B-47 in the Cold War during the Cuban Missile Crisis.
Wow.
That plane has been in service for like 70 years now.
Oh,
like,
it's gone.
It's gone.
Yeah, the B-47. You think the B-52.
Oh, B-52. I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's the big ugly fella.
The B-52 has now had 65 years run or something insane like that. But you're flying at something bigger, and then you go down something smaller?
Yeah, then I volunteered to fight in Vietnam, which, you know, as a career soldier and a fighter, I always wanted to be the fighter pilot.
Right.
So I got over there, and I got to fly fighters. And when I came back, they made me an instructor pilot. So I taught brand-new pilots how to be fighter pilots. Best job in the world.
Wow. Did you fly everything?
I flew the F-104. I think I heard you talk about the starfighter, the one with the wings.
It has no wings. It has canards that stick off the ass of it. Like, if you'd walk up on that plane, you'd think, well, how does this plane, where's the lift come from? It looks like a missile.
It is like a missile. And you could take off with that thing and do an Immelmann over the runway at 10,000 feet. Of course, now with the F-15, that's kind of normal. And
but
the F-16.
Is that the kind of plane that if you know, Harrison Ford a couple days back, lost power.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he's flying a World War II vintage plane. And it doesn't have a swept wing, you know, it's a straight wing. And he loses power, and he's able to glide it and flare it at the end or whatever and come in and land the plane relatively safely. This thing doesn't look like it would glide.
It does, but not very well. I mean, it has a glide ratio, but you have to go really fast, so you cover a lot of territory. And all of them do glide. I mean, actually, that would glide better than Harrison Ford's BT-13 because it doesn't have the drag. The propeller and the wing struts on all create more drag. So this has less drag. It will actually glide better.
Huh. Was it the last? I mean, to me, that Vietnam era, maybe a little Korea, that was the end of the sort of glory days of the Top Gun guys and the fighters. I mean, at the beginning, the equipment wasn't there. You know, it was propeller-driven stuff. Yeah, Mustangs, Corsairs were pretty cool. But it was big. Those planes are big. The thing that's crazy is how big those old World War II planes are when you walk up on them. And then now everything is just fly-by-wire, and it's got a computer in it. And by the way, there's none of that, on your way back from the escort or the MiG alley, see if you can find some targets of opportunity and just do what you want. Now, everything, I'm sure everyone is very well looked after. You're going to have to account for every tracer bullet you fire, everything that gets... This was a sweet spot of go out and go cowboy with really cool supersonic equipment.
Even in Vietnam. I got shut up once in Vietnam. It took 3 hours to get clearance to shoot back at them.
Oh, really?
Oh, really, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, that was... Anyhow, I don't want to go into
that. And it just kept going.
Yeah.
Right? And then
so the glory days of the fighter pilot are gone.
The guys in World War II, it's like, go fly with the bombers, escort them, and then on your way back... If you see like a train or maybe a mule pulling a cart or something and the guy on the cart looks German, just go ahead and open up. Just go ahead. Like, could you imagine that being the orders now? I mean, there's tons of footage of guys just sort of coming back going, oh, what do we got down there? That's a farmhouse. I wonder what that's in there. Maybe there's a tank in there. I don't know. So fire a couple of missiles into it or just open up into it.
Yeah, it took a while. You know, every target has to be approved on three levels now.
Right. So. Yeah, no more targets opportunity. So you get back from Vietnam, you become an instructor, which sounds amazing. Where were you out of?
Luke Field in Phoenix.
And Gary, you can get rid of the plane if you like. And so you're basically getting paid to fly multi-million dollar aircraft and me and Drew have to pay for the fuel.
That's right, and it does use some gas. But you know, the fighter pilots are just like all the other guys. We used to talk about, you know, the best thing flying fighters, the next best thing is having sex. It just depends on which one you did last, you know.
Did you find those guys had a higher addiction or alcohol rate than most guys?
Well, yeah.
Yeah, because they
drank a lot.
Yeah, they're...
It was a hard partying, hard drinking crew for the most part.
Yeah, that's who those guys are, right. The daredevils.
Yeah, yeah, really.
And they're just, I mean, back then it was, you know, it was scotch, but that's a group that would go out and drink. And I don't know why, Drew. Is it that you have to knock the edge off?
Well, there's that, but people that actually sort of feel good in extreme circumstances tend to have the gene for alcoholism. It's very simple. That's the at-risk population, is the people that perform best, extreme athletes, shortstops, fighter pilots, people that it's race car drivers. The only time you don't feel anxious is when you're in these extreme circumstances, and that's alcoholism.
I can tell you on a much lower level, when I climb out of the race car, I want a beer badly, like that second. And it's a weird thing because I enjoy putting a few beers back, but I don't have that feeling of urgency normally. Like, give me that beer. Give me that beer now.
Right.
So it's that feeling like I got to knock this down.
I raced cars for in SCCA during the 60s and 70s.
Oh, yeah, that's right. So you're one of those guys that needs the rush.
Love the speed, man.
What kind of cars did you race?
Well, I started off with I had a Jaguar. So I had a XK140.
Wow.
And I said, you know what? I can't race this beautiful car. So I got a bug-eyed Sprite and started with that.
You know what a bug-eyed Sprite looks like?
I have no idea.
Nope. It looks like a bug-eyed Sprite.
It does.
When you see a picture of a bug-eyed Sprite, you go, that's the perfect name for that car. I mean, there could be, you know, the Aventador, the Bugatti Aventador. You don't know what an Aventador is.
No idea.
Can
you show the bug-eyed Sprite up there?
Lamborghini, I think, has the Aventador. But point is when you see the bug-eyed Sprite, that's bug-eyed Sprite.
Yep.
Sure enough. Yeah.
And they think they're MG or Triumph, and they have that fixed. But anyway, so you're having fun running around in that.
Yeah, somebody had a Cobra, and they let me drive
Austin Healey makes the bug-eyed Sprite. Huh? There you go.
Yeah.
And now the legendary Cobra, which is basically taking a bug-eyed Sprite and putting another 300 horsepower
that's right.
in it. So that must have been pretty hairy.
Oh, that was a blast. Yeah, that was
driving a 289?
289, yeah.
And tons of success with that.
Yeah, it was a great car.
That's the first I guess Corvettes were doing all right, but that was like a real Europeans dominated sports car racing.
Right, right.
We did ovals.
Right.
We did Indy and we did, you know, NASCAR. We did ovals, but they did road racing. And those were like the first cars. Well, I mean, that the Cobra is an English car.
Yeah.
It's just
got it.
Just Carroll Shelby got a bunch of V8s for it.
We designed and built one of the first Formula Super Vs in the country.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and went out and won the first race. And then I got busy and got divorced and did a bunch of other things and got out of racing, and that was in the mid-70s.
How did you then get into this?
Well, like I said, after my third divorce, I said, you know what? I got to figure this shit out. Something's wrong here. I got 3 degrees. I know what, you know, I'm pretty smart, so I can study. So I found teachers from Europe, a Tantra teacher from India. I studied with a Native American shaman for about 15 years off and on. And I start working with guys, and I did some men's weekends and that kind of thing. And the guys say, well, you should be teaching this stuff. Mm-hmm. So that's how I got to it. I start collecting more and just talking to guys because, you know, guys think they know everything about sex. And, you know, you talk to the women and they say, no. But the bad news is the women won't tell the guys that they're a bad lover because they don't want to hurt his feelings.
And not only do they not want to tell him he's a bad lover, they don't even want to sort of coach him up. And it's weird.
It's a weird sort of, you're supposed to know, man. You're supposed to know how to sweep me off my feet and deliver me into ecstasy.
Yeah.
You have this fantasy about that.
If I have to tell you, then blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And it's now, the thing that's weird is in life, you know, your wife will weigh in on, don't wear that tie with that jacket. You look like a used car salesman and to do this and don't do that. And, you know, there's all that. I mean, there's no problem generally in a relationship. It's not like my wife's skittish around me. She'll go, look, you haven't seen your kids in a week. Go on, they're out in the yard. Go out there and go out, you know, go out and hang, throw the ball at them or something, whatever. And I don't go, how dare you speak to me? Like, they will say whatever, but then you get in the bedroom and it's like, they become demure or something, like it's not their role. Or I think a lot of it is a societal thing where if a woman tells you what she wants and what feels good, then somehow she becomes a whore or something, or loose or something like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
because if you think about it all the time, well, hold on. Guys will say all the time, let me tell you what I like.
Yeah,
I like the big titties, or I like the big ass, or here's my move, or you know, here's what I like.
No, they're explicit.
Women aren't really allowed to say out loud, let me tell you my thing. I like a wide cock, like a paint can.
but not only black. That, not only that, but there's also the fantasies that women carry with them, whether it's biological or social, whatever it might be. You know, she has to coach up Prince Charming. She has
right.
No, I need you to dress a certain way, and when you come, I need you to know how to dance. No, that guy's supposed to just be that.
Yeah,
and
but like I said, she won't mind telling Prince Charming how to dress
once he's on her watch.
Or to take dance lessons. Yeah, that's true. Dave, 21 from Philadelphia.
Hey, guys, how's it going?
Good.
Hey, now.
Hey, now. What a thrill to talk to you guys. I've been loving the classic love line.
Thank you.
So I have a bit of a problem I hope I could spring on you guys. I've been with this girl just for on and off for about 5 years now. And we're talking about engagement or moving in together, a marriage or something, but at the same time we seem to fight multiple times every single day of my life. I was just wondering which direction. I feel like I'm standing on a fence. I don't know which way to go with it.
Well, 21, I guys are going to fight at 21. Girls are going to fight at 21. It's really...
She's texting him right now.
Yeah.
Dave, you've been together since you were 16, on and off. That should tell you something.
Yeah.
Come on now.
Might be time.
And marriage at 21, if you want to know about bad outcomes, look at that data. Come on.
Yeah, Dave. Maybe it's time. And here's the problem, too, we talk about all the time. You don't really need the experience of having... I've been with a bunch of different women, different types, different shapes, different colors, different personalities. You don't need it. Unfortunately, when you never have it, you think you need it. Mm-hmm. It's hard for guys to move forward. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I'd say if you took your average couple that got married at 21 and the guy met her when he was, you know, freshman, sophomore in high school, that guy starts thinking about 28, 29. Geez, it's the only person. And by the way, his buddies will come up to him and go, Tammy's the only person you've never slept with another. And then that guy's going to start getting restless. Now, you can move on. You find out everything's about the same and there's no big difference. There's no big difference between 10 and 100 and whatever. But you'll never know it. Mm. And it'll usually bother guys more so than women.
Yeah.
And that's probably a good enough reason, just that one alone.
And I'll throw another good one, which is we live until we're 80 or 90 these days. And you want to at least spend two-thirds of your life married, not nine-tenths.
Right. Michael, 27, Colorado Springs.
Yes, hello.
What's going on?
What's up? I had a question for Dr. Drew.
Yeah.
All right, sir. It's a pleasure to talk to you, first of all. Here's the question. I suffer from extreme panic and anxiety disorder. It's led off into agoraphobia, depression, things like that.
Jeez.
And, you know, I'm on the medicine for it and all that, but my big problem is bringing awareness to it and acceptance of it from, you know, family and friends, stuff like that.
Yeah.
Do you have any advice on that?
Why is that important to you? And I mean that not to be combative, but just I'm curious where the rubber hits the road for you. Why is it important? We lost him?
I don't know. I'm saying let's try to punch him again. Michael?
It just is important to me to have the communication there and
Before Drew answers, really quick, did somebody do something to you that you need to kind of repay them for?
Trauma.
What's that?
No.
No, okay. All right, so there's no, you know, because we did Loveline for a long time, and we talked to a lot of, like, 16-year-old girls, and like, I'm dating a black guy, and I want to tell my dad.
Yeah.
And you're like, why do you feel necessary to tell your dad? Well, I just want to be truthful. Yeah. And then you'd go, well, you know, my dad's the head of the local clan, and he beat me severely as a young child and sexually abused me. And I go, oh, I get it. It's payback for daddy time. So the motive for telling him is not the truth. The motive is, I'm going to pay back this asshole for what he did to me. So
I always, for anybody, try to
remove that from the equation. I mean, and then we're just at, well, I'd like to tell my family the truth.
All right. So they won't, unless they've experienced panic, they would not really appreciate it. That's just the way panic is. I had panic in college. I know what you're talking
about.
You had
it as an adult.
I do. Until
I coached you up.
Until you screamed at me.
Worked like a charm, didn't it?
Well, we got the day done.
All you needed was a firm guiding hand.
Yeah. Is that what your penis was that day?
I showed up in Drew's dressing room and said, get the fuck back out there. Let's go. And it felt better. but here's what I'm saying, though, and I mean it. I hate it when somebody is having a meltdown and everybody around them is like, oh, my God, do you need water? Oh, my God, oh, my God. Do you want a bag to breathe in? Yeah. Oh, my God, I know exactly what you're feeling.
Yeah.
You have every right to feel that way.
Yeah.
I want the person to walk in, like, from one of your fucking flight units and go, hey, get up, dust yourself off, and get the fuck going.
Yeah.
And I feel like that person snaps out of it when they can.
When they can. And I'm,
Thank you.
I can do that.
Yeah.
But look, man, you know, get the therapy. It's about you. It's not about them. And you want, of course, people to understand when you're having a panic attack, but they're not really going to understand even when you tell them. So, focus on getting your panic properly managed so you don't have problems in these social contexts. That's what's important here.
All right, Drew, how you doing? You got a little time issue?
Five minutes.
Five minutes. All right. Let's see if we can squeeze in a couple last calls. Danny, 50, Alameda.
Get it on, guys.
Get it on, man.
It is a immense pleasure to speak with you guys.
Thank you.
Absolutely. So here's the background. I am 50. I am the father of three, a 20-year-old son from my first marriage, and then two younger kids, 12 and 14, from my wife's first marriage.
Mm-hmm.
Since we married 7 years ago, our family has always lived together. Our respective exes are in no way involved in our kids' lives.
It's not good.
Yeah.
No, not good. I am bipolar.
Great.
And my son and I lived as bachelors for 4 years before I got remarried.
Mm-hmm.
He's now 20. He's, by every measure, an awesome kid. He goes to a great school. He's a college athlete. He gets reasonable grades. But I also know that he has struggled a little bit with depression, but is a little reluctant to kind of dive in. He's seen a doctor.
Okay.
He was very temporarily on an antidepressant, but went off of it, reported back to the doctor. Doctor said everything seems to be okay, just to be aware of it. I am concerned because of my genetics, because of the trauma he's been through.
What are his athletics that he participates in?
He's a college water polo player.
Oh, that's good.
So, my feeling is just every minute you're in the pool, you're not depressed.
Right.
I imagine during the off season, that's when it kicks in a little more.
And now, listen, Danny's son has a bipolar heritage. And so somebody with a bipolar dad with depression should not be put on antidepressants. He should put on mood stabilizers. It should be presumptive that he's got that biology if he manifests depression. So whoever the treating doctor was, I'm concerned, number one. Number two, it sounds like you think he ought to have therapy. And here's the question. He should see a specialist. He should see somebody who really understands these things.
But not he goes just, to a college, so they
well,
have
but they
these
have mental,
people,
yeah,
right?
They have mental health services. It's designed for him. It's free. You really should keep the pressure on. The question is, do you just encourage strongly, or do you really bring the hammer down? You say, hey, I'm not paying for school anymore if you don't do this.
Before we put a bow on this thing, yeah. And Frank as and, well.
Let me just say, Sean, the twitching in your sleep is called nocturnal myoclonus. There are medicines to stop it, but don't.
That's Sean from Fresno. Yeah. All right. I feel like we took this word depression like we're doing with a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
You know, like voter suppression.
Yeah.
And I mean, it sort of exists, but not really. But now we've really given it some wheels and put a rocket up its ass. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, I grew up, it wasn't discussed. There were people that were happy. There was people that were sad. Everyone went to work. That was it. And everyone was sitting around looking in the mirror, wondering if they were depressed, getting a count of hands in their squadron, who's depressed, who's not depressed. I felt like because it wasn't really an option, we just lived.
Yeah.
Are we making a little more of a meal out of it now than we need to?
Or are people so poorly attended to during childhood that we're really having serious stuff? And I think it's a little bit of both.
I don't think they're poorly attended.
Oh, yes.
They're over-attended.
Oh, no. Well, there's that. There's
but
over-attending.
They're also,
there's both over- and under-attending.
They're overstimulated.
We're not getting it right.
Either way.
So, yeah. So
Frank, anyone in the squadron depressed and anything... couple of fingers of rye whiskey wouldn't have cured.
That's right. I mean, if you can see, there was a picture of a guy holding looked like a glass and a cigarette. It's 4:30. He said, "What's the matter with this picture?" Because he wasn't in the stag bar with the rest of the guys drinking. You know, there wasn't any depression there. It was nothing but exuberance.
I missed the stag bar. Frank Wieger's the name of the book. So that's why we do that. Men, women, and their hormones. It's available on Amazon. I'm guessing it's available on Amazon.
Amazon, Nook, iTunes.
Yeah, good. Go ahead and just go to our website.
Distilled it down from the manual to something readable.
Yes.
Okay, Drew.
Yes.
Doing the.
Go ahead.
When I'm doing the plug part, that's when you should. Okay. Anyway, if you go to Amazon, click through. I'm trying to help you, man, Drew. That's my thing. Also, Road Hard screenings in Vegas coming up at the Brendan Theater at the Palms Casino, and that's Saturday, so come on out and say hi.
Yeah, great movie. Really enjoyed it.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, really liked
it. We'll just do another half hour with Frank. And then you can go to adamcarolla.com and click the Road Hard banner to find out where it's playing and all that. This man's got 3 degrees and flies fighter jets, so he says it's good. He knows his business.
You must know.
Thank you all, and Mangria. Oh, that would go over well in the stag bar. CorollaDrinks.com. So until next time, this is Adam Carolla for Dr. Drew, Frank Wiegers, Chris Max Patton, Gary Haftard saying mahalo.
This is Corolla Digital. This is Corolla Digital.
Stay tuned for the latest AP news headlines from Podcast One right after this. If you're a business owner, you know that your company is only as good as the people that you hire. But when you're short-staffed, there's no time to deal with all the different job sites. Until now. That's right. Thanks to ZipRecruiter.com, you can post to 100-plus job sites with one single click. Just post once, and within 24 hours, watch your candidates roll into ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use interface. Try ZipRecruiter for free right now at ZipRecruiter.com/podcast. That's ZipRecruiter.com/podcast.